I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So Om Gana Timirandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So now today we're going to read from chapter 6, How to Discharge Devotional Service. Very important chapter. Srila Rupa Goswami states that his elder brother Sanatan Goswami has compiled Hari Bhakti Vilas for the guidance of the Vaishnavas, and therein has mentioned many rules and regulations to be followed by the Vaishnavas. Some of them are very important and prominent, and Srila Rupa Goswami will now mention these very important items for our benefit. The purport of this statement is that Srila Rupa Goswami proposes to mention only basic principles, not details. So one point that Prabhupada comments on is that a lot of the Hari Bhakti Vilas was compiled specifically to reach out to ritualistic brahmanas. So if you understand the scenario in which the Goswamis were preaching, there were a lot of ritualistic brahmanas and very much a caste-conscious society. So in order to reach out to a certain class of people, you have to perhaps add a few rules and regulations. I'll give you an example. One is the don't eat carrots. Some of you may have heard that before. I think even you brahmacharis eat carrots sometimes. So you're violating the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Oh my God. You are going to hell. So, I also eat carrots too, so we'll see you in hell. So, the point is, that injunction is there to sort of attract the ritualistic brahmanas, because he wanted to show that we also have, you know, an elaborate system of rituals, and so the people feel very much at home or accustomed or attracted to Krishna consciousness. For example, let's give another example in Prabhupada's activities, that when Prabhupada installed the deities in Vrindavan Dham, Krishna Balaram Mandir, Prabhupada called for all the ritualistic brahmanas to do their swaha business. And they were doing it, and all the mantras and everything like that. Prabhupada actually commented that the deities were actually installed by the Harinama Kirtan, rather than all the swaha business. But, so the people would accept us, therefore, we did that. And similarly, when we had our deity worship or deity installation in Tirupati, we had all the South Indian people come. You know, actually the Acharyas, even the Acharya from the Ramanuja sect, he came and he supervised the deity installation. So one may question, you know, why? I mean, we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Why do we follow the rituals in another sect? The reason is that we're in Tirupati, and when in Tirupati, you do as the Tirupatis do. You know, and when in Rome, do as the Romans do. And this way, they respect us, and it's part of a relationship. Because certain rituals are not essential to our Vaishnava tradition, but they can be accepted or rejected according to the situation. Prabhupada even comments that certain practices that are applicable in India may not be applicable in the Western world. Certain dietary things. I mean, obviously, Prabhupada ate carrots everywhere, even in India. And now, as far as the carrot thing is concerned, there's one injunction in the Vedic literatures, not in the Vedic literatures, but the secondary literatures, that state that the carrots are the bones and the blood of the sage. And so that's why you don't eat it. But actually, in one sense, those are the Indian carrots that are bright red. I also eat them. But anyway, when I'm in India. So I'm eating the sage, you know, committing a great offense. So anyway, there are certain superstitions in India. And so we have to be careful not to consider that these particular superstitions are on the same platform as what Prabhupada has presented to us. I mean, for example, one superstition in India is that whenever you yawn, you're supposed to snap your fingers. You probably heard about this one before. And so I ran into one of my godbrothers who's doing that, and I didn't understand what it was in the beginning. I thought he was just hungry. You know, just, where's the food? I said, you know, can I prepare some prasadam for you? So, and so you see people doing that. Like that. But in the West, I mean, if you start doing that in public, you know, when you listen, you're on Sankirtan. You know, people will think you're weird. So anyway, so we have to adjust certain things and not really get into, you know, many of the superstitions that are there in India. And make things very simple so that we can preach, at least in the Western world. For example, I was speaking to our deity worship minister, Nrisimha Thulacha, about different mudras and everything like that. And he's a minister for the whole world, you know, the big chief. And he said he doesn't do mudras. But in India, you may want to do mudras because it impresses people. You know, in the West, people are not going to understand what you're doing when you take your hands and go like this and this and this. They'll say, what? What's wrong with the guy? But in India, they'll say, wow, that's really impressive. It must be spiritual. So there's that. Anyway, different methods of presentation. That's all. That's the only point I'm making here. So we're interested in the basic principles. And Prabhupada comments more about this later on in this paragraph. For example, the basic principle is that one has to accept a spiritual master. Exactly how one follows the instructions of his spiritual master is considered a detail. In other words, as Prabhupada comments in the Bhagavad Gita, that blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. In other words, if the spiritual master gives an instruction, I mean, there's the typical story that we always tell in this regard, that the spiritual master one time asked his disciples for some money to buy a car or something like that. He said, can I have some money to buy a car? And the disciple says, yes. And then the disciple says to the guru, everything is yours, Guru Dave. And so then he says, oh, a very nice disciple. Because he thinks the disciple is just charging everything on his own credit card. So then, and then the disciple, the guru asks him, you know, well, I would also like a new computer. I'm just putting it in modern terms. The story wasn't originally told in terms of computers and cars. And the disciple buys him the latest iMac or something like that. They say iMac, iPad, iPaid. So, so he buys him the latest computer. And it's all you. Everything is yours, Gurudev. What a nice surrendered disciple. And so this goes on and on, and then eventually the guru happens to look at his credit card statements. And he finds that the disciple has actually charged everything on his credit card. And he calls the disciple and he says, what's happening? The disciple says, you asked me for everything. He said, but, you know, I'm in $20,000 debt now, and there's no money in my bank account. And then the disciple says, everything was yours, Gurudev. Anyway, so in other words, when we're dealing with our spiritual master, then we have the right to inquire. You know, as we hear from the Bhagavad Gita, inquire submissively and render service. And you see in the case of some of Prabhupada's most intimate devotees, like Tamal Krishnamurti, for example, Prabhupada would give them instruction, and then he would present a different point of view, and there would be back and forth discussion. Not that he would disobey Prabhupada. Of course, there was one time when Prabhupada said, you should go to China. And, you know, anyway, there's that whole story. And Prabhupada said, either you follow my instruction or just stay here in Mayapur and I'm taking all your service away. So he went to China. But anyway, but he never disobeyed Prabhupada. But there was always that back and forth discussion, you know, how should I do this? Do you think this is practical? Or in another case, Prabhupada wanted to bring him back to India because he was Prabhupada's most trusted lieutenant in India. Practically everybody else was getting cheated in India. And so Prabhupada went to the United States to bring him back. He said, I've come here to bring you back. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, what he did is he brought like the 20 new devotees he had just made, had them all bring a flower, they all newly shaven, went to Prabhupada and presented, and Prabhupada said, you can stay. So it wasn't, it wasn't blind following there. And Prabhupada basically always called for Tamal Krishna Maharaj whenever there was some issue or problem. He always had him take care of, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was with Prabhupada as Prabhupada left this world, along with Bhakti Chu Maharaj and some other devotees. But in any case, we can understand by hearing or seeing or understanding what happened between Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, that one should have this dynamic relationship with the spiritual master. Of course, all etiquette should always be there. But, how to follow the instruction of the spiritual master, that's a detail. And actually, even Prabhupada was given the instruction by his spiritual master to go to the Western world or preach in English. And it took quite a few years to carry it out. It's not like Prabhupada was a very practical person. It's not that Prabhupada said, all right, goodbye wife, goodbye children, immediately. No, Prabhupada was a student at that particular time. But Prabhupada was actually exercising a lot of discrimination how to carry out that order. He was thinking, let me do business. That didn't work. Everything fell apart. And then eventually he took sannyas, came to the Western world, and that's why we're here today. For example, if one is following the instructions of a spiritual master and the instruction is different from the instructions of another spiritual master, this is called detailed information. But the basic principle of acceptance of a spiritual master is good everywhere, although the details may be different. So, of course, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we all follow the instructions of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I mean, he's our primary siksha guru. So, obviously, this keeps us unified. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't be unified. It's very important, like Prabhupada said, unity and diversity, to work together, respect others' differences, but also accept Prabhupada's direction as, the topmost direction, so that we can work together. And it's a challenge. It's always been a challenge to work together, this unity and diversity. And Prabhupada said the GBC should discuss this during their GBC meetings, how to work together in spite of diverse viewpoints on things. And we see this every day. I deal with this as a GBC person every day on the internet. There's all this diversity. And the challenge is how to bring us all together under Prabhupada's direction. So, Rupa Goswami, he mentions the basic principles as follows. One, accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. So, we should always remember the lotus feet are connected to the mouth, too. Isn't that how, I love your lotus feet, Guru Maharaj, but I don't like what you say. You're too heavy. I mean, just like some of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples accused him of being too heavy. His cutting technique. And then they fell down, Prabhupada said. So the whole body is connected. But accepting the lotus feet means it's a very holistic statement. It can be taken literally, of course, worshipping the lotus feet of a great personality. The foot dust and the foot bathing water is very potent. But it should also be taken in a larger sense, that we accept the order of the spiritual master. Two is becoming initiated by the spiritual master and and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. So Prabhupada said generally the siksha guru becomes the initiating guru. And of course initiation, that's initiation is like the sambandha, and then the learning how to discharge devotional service, abhideya. Three, obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. In other words, this is very similar to Rupa Goswami's comment or nutshell verse in the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Gyanakarmanavartam Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhakti Rutamam. He says, as far as the positive qualities of devotional service, is doing what Krishna wants, but actually doing it with a sense of devotion, not resentfully, you know, why does Guru Maharaj want me to do this? Phew. You know, I have to do this. If you actually think in your mind you have to do something, then it sort of separates you from devotion. You should say, I want to, I'm choosing to do this because I want to please my guru. So devotion means to please a particular individual. So 4, following in the footsteps of great acharyas or teachers under the direction of the spiritual master. In other words, approaching the great acharyas through the instructions of the spiritual master. Like you'll find, for example, like if you read Jiva Dharma, you'll find certain processes are followed in Jiva Dharma that we don't have in ISKCON. Like, you know, going to the guru and say, hey, who am I in the spiritual world? You know, like, you go and you say, Gurudev, I'm very attracted to Lalita Sakhi or something like that. And Gurudev says, yes, your name is Louise or something. I'm just being funny. I'm obviously, that's a Western name, I know that. I mean, it's not that I made a mistake, but, you know, so, and the guru says, and then they have this thing called the Kadasha Bhava, you know, the 11-fold aspects of your personality in the spiritual world, what you look like, what you dress, what your service is, etc., like that. We don't follow that process. So you'll find things that the great acharyas write about that we just don't do, because Srila Prabhupada understands how to adjust things, you know, the details according to time, place, and circumstance. Unfortunately, we find devotees nowadays who go to the great acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and they take things that Prabhupada didn't want us to do, and it ends up in sahajism or deviations. So we should see the great acharyas, and eventually, you know, most of us will read the books of the great acharyas, like I'm reading Jiva Dharma and much of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works, through the lens of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, not jumping over the head. That's called your Maryada Vyatikrama. You know, you jump over the head, you're violating the etiquette of your spiritual master, of the acharya, of Srila Prabhupada especially. So we have to go through Srila Prabhupada, and that's why Srila Prabhupada emphasized reading his books thoroughly first. I mean, one devotee, I think it was Brahmananda, said to Prabhupada, when Prabhupada said, who's your favorite author? And he said, Bhaktivinoda, and Prabhupada said, no, that's your second favorite author. Who's your favorite author? And then Brahmananda said, you are Prabhupada. Because, you know, we see through, just like we have Shastra Chakshus, we see this world through the eyes of Shastra. So we see the previous acharyas through the vision of Srila Prabhupada. It's a really important point. It says, under the direction of the spiritual master. 5 is inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. This is very important too. You know, how can I make spiritual advancement? And then the spiritual master will say, you know, what are your issues? What are you struggling with? What about your anarthas? What is your sadhana like? And you have to be ready to be honest, you know, guyamakyati prichati. And just say, well, I can't wake up earlier than 9 o'clock in the morning. And the guru will say, well, have you tried an alarm clock? Well, I never thought about that one. Just like sometimes I emphasize to the devotees, they tell them it'd be a good idea if they got watches, you know, so they can tell what time it is. And most of the devotees don't have watches nowadays, even though Prabhupada always had a watch. Bhaktivinoda Thakur always had a watch. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a watch. And I say, how do you tell the time? They say, well, my mobile phone. And I said, what do you do with your mobile phone at night? I turn it off. So, you know, certain instructions according to the devotee's level of spiritual advancement, whether they're in the beginning stages of, you know, Vaidhi or further advanced. So we should always be inquiring, like, you know, how can I advance more? Or how can I serve? Actually, Prabhupada said, because that's synonymous with how you can advance more. Like Prabhupada said, the only question he asks his spiritual master is, how can I serve you? And so this, you know, this question we should ask. 6, being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Wow. That's a tough one. And Prabhupada explains, this means when we were engaged in devotional service to the Lord, we must be prepared to give up something which we may not like to give up. And also, we have to accept something which may not like to accept. That happens. I mean, it's like when Tamal Krishnamurti was asked, you go to China. You know, he didn't want to give up his Radha Damodar party. You know, obviously you're attached to it. You know, so many devotees, so many buses, how will things go on without me? And he didn't want to go to China. And the reason Prabhupada suggested China is that when the devotees in America were very upset with Tamal Krishnamurti because he was taking all the brahmacharis from the temples, which is a good idea. Anyway, so he was taking all the devotees, brahmacharis from the temple, stealing them in the middle of the night. The temple president would wake up the next morning and find all the devotees gone. So they complained to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada confronted Tamal Krishnamurti, and Tamal Krishnamurti said, what do they want me to do? You know, go to China? And then, you know, a few hours later, Prabhupada said that was a good idea. He came up with, you know, Krishna spoke through your mouth. Tamal Krishnamurti said, I didn't mean it like that. I meant, you know, like anywhere, you know, like New Zealand or something. But he didn't say that. But he said, and then Prabhupada said, no, Krishna was speaking through your mouth. So, so he had to really accept, that was a test, that he had to accept something he didn't want to do. I mean, because going to China means basically he had to dress in like Western clothes and then make believe he was, ultimately, he did go, but in the beginning he had to go practically representing a liquor company. Did you know that story? Like there was another devotee whose father was one of the chief owners or CEO or something like that of Seagram's. You heard of Seagram's before? Seagram's is a big liquor company. And so they had to go as representatives of the company. They never ended up going, but it was Prabhupada changed the whole thing. But later on, Tamal Krishnamurti went, and because of that, we have so many Chinese devotees. So sometimes you see, why is Prabhupada asking me to do that? Is he just punishing me? But Prabhupada had a vision. You know, Prabhupada could accomplish many things with one order. You have to see, the spiritual master is able to see, you know, in the future, what will be the result of that action. Next one, the next way to follow the spiritual master is residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwarka or Vrindavan. All right, so let's all go. What are we doing here? No, because you make your place of residence. Like Prabhupada said, the temples of Vaikuntha, they're non-different from... I tell this to devotees all the time. They say, oh, I'm simply thinking of Radhashyam Shundra. I said, that's nice, but your deities here are non-different from Radhashyam Shundra. There's no difference. You know, so people don't get that through their little brains, that when deities are properly installed, it's the same Krishna. I mean, of course, we have a special tract for Radhashyam Shundra, too, because Prabhupada installed those deities, etc. But, you know, you have the Radha Giridhari. I mean, that's the same. You don't have to... I mean, of course, it's nice to go to Vrindavan, but you don't have to run to Vrindavan and simply live there like a Babaji. Mm. Unless you have service. And nowadays we find devotees going places and they don't have service. They just hang out in Vrindavan. And it's not really Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada did not want people living in the holy place unless they had some service, you know, specifically preaching service, especially the Westerners. I mean, because the Westerners aren't going to Mayapur or Vrindavan just to generally clean the holy dham. You know, you can hire some people there to do that. But nowadays, people just go there and live there. I mean, what is the need? I mean, you go there for pilgrimage, sure. That inspires you, and then you come back very inspired to preach. But unless you're properly situated for preaching, why live in some place? All right, next one is accepting only what is necessary or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary. That's a big one. That means, generally, don't eat too much of the wrong things. Keep your body healthy. That's a difficult one for most people because the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. So we are like Kumbhakarna. Problem with Kumbhakarna, he was eating so much that there wasn't enough left over for anyone else. So they had to make this trick so that he would sleep most of the time. So we should be very careful, not only eating quantity, but the specific quality of whatever helps us have the best health for serving Krishna. It's not only the amount, but it's what you eat. I mean, we all have a different metabolism, so we can adjust that like that. Or, you know, or collecting too much, you know, like achahara, payasa, shabha, japa, niyamangra, all these things like that. Or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary, you know. Of course, I have to go to the movies to see what the material world is like, so I'll be able to preach Krishna consciousness. You know, one time, one of the other sannyasis took me to, Disney World? Just to see all the rides. In case we wanted to have those rides in Sridharmayapur or something like that. So there were two sannyasis on the this ride, Small World, where you have all these little dolls dancing around, chanting on our clickers. I think just maybe it wasn't necessary, you know. Can you imagine that? You know? What if people came and saw us, you know, choosing us, Hare Krishna, going on the mountain rides and the roller coasters together. So, I mean, a lot of funny stories in ISKCON. Anyway, so, next one is easy. Observing the fasting days, Dhyana Ekadasi, Ekadasi is the 11th day of the moon, and 10, Prabhupada also said about Ekadasi, we should approach it in a positive way. It's a special day for remembering Krishna. Not that we think, you know, people start talking ritualistically now about the Papa Purusha and the grains. You know, we don't take grains, obviously. But we don't approach it in a ritualistic way. You know, one time there was a devotee who published a whole book about Ekadasi, and it just encouraged people, like in the Karmakanda practices. You know, you follow this Ekadasi, you'll find a good wife. Well, maybe you brahmacharis don't want to follow that Ekadasi. So, no, I'm going to eat cranes on that Ekadasi. It's a dangerous Ekadasi. You know? You know, so that, you know, if you don't want to bring in the Karmakanja aspect to our Krishna consciousness. You know, you follow Ekadasi because you get money. And, you know, we should think we follow Ekadasi, increase the hearing and chanting, whatever's required to do that. And if eating a little simple prasadam will help you increase the hearing and chanting, do it. I mean, one thing I like to do on the Ekadasi, I chant 64 rounds when I'm not doing anything else on the Ekadasi, if I don't have preaching, if I'm not engaged otherwise. And, you know, in order to do that, I take a little prasadam and drink water, because if I didn't do that, I'd be just lying on my back, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And, you know, I'd probably get to 16, but not 64. So, and then I take devotees out on long japa walks and chant 64 rounds. What we do is we have someone drop us off like 20 kilometers away from the temple. And they're not allowed to pick us up either. And the only way we can get back is chant our way back. And so it's nice. It's like Govardhan Parikrama in the Western world. Anyway, that you get a chant, everyone's forced to chant because you can't do anything else. Of course, you could talk Prajalpa too, but you don't do that. And then that's the way, you know, I like observing Ekadasi. And 64 rounds, when you chant 64 rounds, then you realize ultimately that that's just the warm-up. We're supposed to chant 64 rounds every day, but because we're preaching, it's not, we can't do it. But really, that's the standard. And so the next one, 10, is worshiping sacred trees like the banyan tree, of course the tulsi tree. These 10 items are preliminary necessities. In other words, you have to do them. For beginning the discharge of devotional service and regulated principles, in the beginning, a neophyte devotee observes the above 10 principles. Surely he will quickly make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, the next set of instructions is listed as follows. One should rigidly give up the company of non-devotees. Of course, that's the first thing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said when he was asked about the quality of a Vaishnava, a satsanga chaga Vaishnava char. So, what this means is that, of course, we go out and we preach Krishna consciousness, but we don't have like intimate relationship, revealing the mind or anything like that to non-devotees. Because if you do that, let's say if you go to a non-devotee and you say, you know, I'm having some trouble in spiritual life, and they'll say, very good. You know, I mean, just like one devotee went, They told me he went to the doctor, some chiropractor. They had a free chiropractor here in New Zealand. So they went to the free chiropractor, and the chiropractor says, "What do you eat?" And the devotee said, "Well, I have nuts and fruits and vegetables." And the chiropractor said, "No, no. You have to eat meat. Nuts are very bad for you, but meat is very good." That's a German accent. You know what I'm saying? But it, anyway, so the devotee was a little bewildered. Meat? Shall I eat meat? So anyway, so we have to be careful. Because non-devotees generally become happy when you give up Krishna consciousness. Finally you gave that up after so many years. Like, even my mother, she says, "You should become a doctor to me." And I'm 66 years old. You know, kind of impractical to go to medical school at my age. So we have to be very careful. You know, not intimate. We're perfect gentlemen, we're ladies, and people love us because, you know, we're truthful. That's another point. We have one of the devotees here. He works as an electrician, and the reason he got hired is because he went to the his prospective boss. The boss asked, you know, "What are your good qualities and what are your bad qualities?" And he actually listed his bad qualities too, in addition to the good qualities, right? And the boss said, "I hired you because you were truthful," right? Because the bad qualities were like 10 pages, but anyway. So anyway. So, all right, number two, one should not instruct a person who is not desirous of accepting devotional service. Of course, that's one of the offenses I'm chanting to. Three, one should not be very enthusiastic about constructing costly temples or monasteries. Now, usually people construct costly temples and monasteries because they want to have some profit adoration distinction. They want people to admire them. "Oh, this is my temple." As we were saying last night, you know, "Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhaja Me." Right? That's a mantra, you know. Anyway, so, but we can construct costly temples if, there's two things. If it's for preaching, bringing people to Krishna consciousness, it'll be effective. And certainly with many communities like the Indian community, it's very effective. And number two, if it's not an over-endeavor. Because if you over-endeavor, you know, as we see from Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, that's a cause of fall down. Over-endeavor means you give up your sadhana. You're just like so much in anxiety, you can't chant, you can't your rounds, you don't have time to chant your rounds. It's like I've talked to devotees who are like hundreds of rounds behind. You know, one of my friends, who should remain nameless, he said, "You know, I'm 500 rounds behind." And he said, "Now I have to engage in japa purgatory." I said, "If you have that attitude towards japa, you're not on the right path." So one should make sure they finish their rounds every day, read every day, and do their normal sadhana practices every day. I mean, I could say it since I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, there was never a day when I didn't chant 64, I wish. By the way, there was never a day when I didn't chant 16 rounds. I never had to make up from one day to another, not even one time. And even that meant, I mean, I told the story. Some of you heard the story before. One time, when I was a young brahmachari, I was traveling with a sannyasi who wouldn't give me time to chant rounds. He just kept me engaged all day long. You know, in those days, sannyasis were mean. So, you're lucky you joined the move. All joined the movement at a good time. You know. So what I did is one of the things he would ask me to do is go shopping for boga. So I would take an extra 2 hours when I was shopping for boga. And he would ask me, "What took so long?" I said, "Well, there was a big line in the supermarket. There was an accident on the road." Even had to lie a little bit so I had time to chant japa. But then, you know, I had to chant my japa. That's the most important thing. Otherwise, what is the use? Another one is number four. One should not try to read too many books, nor should one develop the idea of earning his livelihood by lecturing on or professionally reciting Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Actually, if you do it professionally, it's not bhakti anymore. Like Prabhupada said, if you get a salary for your devotional service, it's not devotional service anymore. It's just a monetary exchange. So we should concentrate on reading a few books. I mean, sometimes I look at all the books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, and I go, oh my God, how am I going to read them all? And it just bewildered. And then you have like Narottama Das Thakur and the Bhakti Ratnakara, and it just, oh my God. And then I just realize if I just concentrate on a few, that'll be more practical. Otherwise, you know, I'll be reading a lot of books just to impress people by my erudition. So the five, one should not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. In other words, one should be a perfect gentleman or lady. Six, one should not be under the spell of lamentation in loss or jubilation in gain. That's actually a sign of a Shudra. We were talking about that. A Shudra, the Prabhupada defined a Shudra as someone who laments. And of course, on the opposite side, has jubilation when he gets something. So we should just be sama, equal poise in all circumstances. And of course, we can have jubilation when something is done nicely from Krishna's service. You know, someone's distributed a lot of books. The TOVP is completed, hopefully, in the next century. So then we can be very, very happy when that's done. You know, we celebrate. Celebration is good, but not on a personal basis. Oh, you know, I have just gotten the latest iPhone. And then you show it off to everybody. Yeah, this is crazy. And loss, you accept loss as an impetus to chant better. You know, something happens, like Queen Kunti, you know, she asked for more losses. Tatra tatra, Jagat Guru. And this way, Apunarabhavadarshanam, she didn't see birth and death again and again. So, seven, one should not disrespect the demigods. In other words, if you go into someone's house, which we do often, we go into people from India, people from Fiji's house, and there's all these demigods there on the altar. I don't say, what are you doing with these demigods? Anyway, I say, Krishna's God. Throw the rest away. You know, the way I present it to them is that, you know, put them on a lower level at least. You know, Krishna's God, and we respect the demigods. They're all servants of Krishna. Even Nanda Maharaj sometimes, he performs Shivaratri. So, not on a regular basis, but sometimes it's described in the Krishna book that he performed the Shivaratri. So, we should love them. I mean, but respect them in the right way. Like in Bhubaneswar, where it's Lord Shiva's abode, they take the remnants of Lord Jagannath and take it every day and bring it to Lord Shiva. So if you want to respect Lord Shiva, you give him prasadam, not boga. Lord Shiva hates boga. So if you're just offering to Lord Shiva separately, that's an offense. So you take Krishna's prasad, and there's that whole story in the Chaitanya Mango. And when Lord Shiva got the Mahaprasadam, he started dancing in so much ecstasy that the universe was threatened. And then Parvati, Durga, had to stop him. And he just got a little speck of Mahaprasadam that was kept under the fingernails of Narada Muni. And so that, you know, that's a great devotee. I mean, when I get Mahaprasadam, I don't dance like that. I'm not that great. I'm not even a devotee. But I mean, I just, so we should respect someone like that. Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. So next one is, one should not give unnecessary trouble to any living entity. That means even an aunt, not your aunt, but the aunt. Even an aunt, you know, if you see an aunt is struggling, like Prabhupada, one time there was a bug on a flower, and Prabhupada said, put him outside because he give him something to eat. Mm-hmm. So in other words, one has compassion to all the living entities. Not that you have a mosquito and you just, get him. Like Prabhupada was in the, one time he was under the mosquito net, and Shrutakirti was there with him, his servant. It was a mosquito, and Shrutakirti said, should I swat him? And Prabhupada said, no. He hasn't attacked. But then as soon as he attacked, get him. Because, you know, that's the injunction. If someone sets fire, you know, steals your wife, attacks you, gives you poison, etc., they can be attacked too. So, nine, one should carefully avoid the various offenses in chanting the holy name of the Lord or in worshiping the deity in the temple. That's obvious. 10. One should be very intolerant towards the blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna or his devotees. Now, one thing I've seen nowadays is that we have this wonderful thing called the internet. And devotees may have a different opinion about different things from other devotees, which is fine. But then they go on what we call an ad hominem attack. That means a personal attack against the devotee and denigrate them publicly. Even, you know, I was reading some things last night, because it's part of my service to deal with all this stuff, that they make funny cartoons about some sincere Vaishnava, or funny movies about a sincere Vaishnava, just like portraying them in a very, let's say, disrespectful fashion. I mean, completely disrespectful fashion. And, you know, if you have a difference of opinion, do it personally, privately. Follow the right procedure. But somehow or other, many devotees in ISKCON don't know the right procedure to deal with devotees who are even having difficulty. I mean, for example, in Australia, there was this one person who was a sannyasi, gave up sannyas. And another person who was a sannyasi started broadcasting the message all around. And Prabhupada got angry at the second person who was broadcasting the message, rather than the first person who fell down from sannyas. Prabhupada said, you made it impossible for him to come back. Mm. So now it's even worse with this internet. You know, if we have a difference of opinion, then we just like denigrate the person on the internet. And people publish magazines denigrating devotees. You know, there's even this magazine, so-called Back to Prabhupada magazine, where, you know, they denigrate the gurus. I mean, it's all right, they're horrific, that's their problem, or that's their philosophy, it's a free world. But why criticize others in a very nasty way? And so this whole magazine, we were talking about this the other day, every, I guess, month it comes out, and they misquote different gurus in the movement. And I was reading the magazine, you know, because I'm part of the service, as I said, and I was lamenting because they didn't have me in it. I said, "What? Why don't they consider me to be prominent?" So, you know, I wrote them a letter, please criticize me in the next edition. And they did. So I was very happy because I was in good company with the other devotees. All right, so just one more paragraph. Yeah, I mean, because it... worse than being criticized is to be considered a non-entity. Isn't it? Because that's worse. Like one time Prabhupada, a devotee said to Prabhupada, I am the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. And that's worse than being the most fallen. So, just one more paragraph. Without following the above-mentioned 10 principles, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service and practice. In other words, if one is committing offenses against Vaishnavas on the internet or any other way, they can't properly come to sadhana bhakti. What to speak of, you know, bhava bhakti or, you know, anything higher than that. Although Srila Rupa Goswami mentions 20 items, all of them are very important. Out of the 20, the first three, accepting the shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, taking the shade from him and serving him with respect and reverence, are the most important. The reason they're the most important is because if you do that, you follow the rest automatically. You know, it just comes. You know, the spiritual master will tell you to do those things. So if you follow the orders, you know, things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So, any questions or comments before we end class? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. You were mentioning how in some of these other books by the previous acharyas, there's practices that aren't followed in ISKCON.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you can comment on your realization why it is that those practices were never encouraged by Srila Prabhupada, because someone may think that it must be a lack on the Vaishnavas of ISKCON. But Prabhupada obviously has our best interest in mind.
Well, Prabhupada was also following in the footsteps of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. If you read a very nice poem written by Prabhupada called Vrindavan Bhajan, which we read the other day here, Prabhupada actually explains that. He says, one who preaches Krishna consciousness, and of course, Krishna does say in the Gita, one who teaches this message of Bhagavad Gita to others is the most dear to me and will never be one more dear to me. One who preaches Krishna consciousness engages, Prabhupada says, in the real Nirjan Bhajan. Nirjan Bhajan means like absorption in the holy names without people, you know, without social interaction around. And Prabhupada is very heavy about this point. He says that one who simply sits down, and I'm paraphrasing, and thinks he's becoming Krishna conscious and just chanting, then he's simply eating a mind's bananas. Has anyone read this before? You've ever read Vrindavan Bhajan? I advise you to read that. Prabhupada was writing that while he was in Vrindavan, right after he'd left his family. He said, I'm sitting alone here, and I have my family, my wife, my children, everything, but they're all fruitless glory because I have no money. In other words, they're not interested in him anymore. So he's realizing the true nature of mundane society, friendship, and love. Prabhupada always understood it, but it was an emotional ecstasy of Prabhupada that was manifested in that particular poem. So Prabhupada was presenting to us basically a higher understanding that if one engages his body, mind, and words in giving Krishna consciousness to others in some way or other, either assisting those who are directly preaching or preaching, then these things will manifest automatically in the heart. That was Prabhupada's and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's contribution. That, you know, this is a quicker method. Much quicker method. Especially for those of us who are residents in Kali Yuga, which is everybody here. And the method of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was mentioned in the Jiva Dharma is a bona fide method. But that is for very advanced souls. You know, people who are already on the platform of Baba, basically. And there's not many of us on the platform of Baba. Of course, we all are on the platform of Baba Rogue. You know what Baba Rogue is? And material emotions, sick emotions. You know, just like, you know, I see the latest computer and I feel ecstasy. You know, that's called Baba Rogue. Or, you know, I have a friend here, Pranath, and we're talking about the latest copters. You all know Pranav? Yeah. You know, he's my guru. He taught me everything I know about copters. And oftentimes, because you haven't heard this joke before, we call him Dronacharya. So then I experienced Baba Rao, because we just have these talks that go on for like 10 hours about the different things that hold the cameras and the camera stabilizers and the first-person view, isn't it? Talk about these things, and then we swap the USB keys. You know, this is,
well.
Yeah. You know, instead of, you know, the Dati Pratigranati, Guyamakyati Prichati, we copter Pratigranati, whatever. So that's called Baba Rogue. You know, the mundane emotions. And we all experience these things. But if one is actually on the platform of Baba and they've dealt with the Anartas, then in such a context, in a traditional context, what Bhakti Vinod Thakur is presenting is applicable. But we're not in that context. Plus, we're preaching Krishna consciousness, and we have an opportunity to become Krishna conscious in a much quicker way. I mean, in the Jiva Dharma, you find the context is Babaji's who are pure devotees in Vrindavan, and people who are basically giving up this world like that. And there wasn't too much of a preaching context in there. So it's just a different situation. Plus, if we do follow that, we'll just have a bunch of sahajas and our movement will be ruined. Because people generally, all of us think we're more advanced than we actually are. When I was a new brahmachari, I thought, you know, after a week I had realized my spiritual identity. Because me and the other brahmacharis, we read the Krishna book about the coward boys, and we looked at each other. Yes, I'm a coward boy. I'm a coward boy too. You know? So, you know, that's the problem. You know, one must be free from anarthas before they can actually start meditating or understanding spiritual identity. And it will be revealed. When it's time, it's not wrong to understand your spiritual identity, but it will be revealed by Lord Chaitanya because we're engaged in Sankirtan. There's no doubt about it. It's like one day you'll just see that you're just a cow. You know, and you just go around the temple. But anyway, I mean, what's wrong with being a cow in the spiritual world? One time I was giving an initiation, and one lady, she said, "Please give me a real sexy name when I get initiated." I said, I'll call you Boomy. She almost left the movement after that. So, yeah, it would destroy our movement. Prabhupada got very upset when dealing with devotees who were trying to do these things. There was this whole Gopi Baba Club in Los Angeles many years ago. Prabhupada got very upset and he said, "We'd stop the movement, we'd all become sahajas." And that's generally what happens. I mean, and then it gets degraded to the point where people are actually, men start dressing up like gopis. In order, you know, because you project a material understanding on the spiritual realm. So, you know, you come to class and the brahmacharya is wearing lipstick and earrings with feminine gestures like that. You know? It's really not something we want. It's not applicable. Although what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about is applicable in that particular context. When you have a lot of pure devotees, this is right after Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda disappeared. You know, if you look at the context of Jiva Dharma, anyone here read Jiva Dharma? No. It's taking place in a place called Surabhi Kunj. And it's right after Lord Nityananda disappeared from the planet. And these were people who had met Lord Nityananda. Very renounced, you know, pure devotees and everything like that. And that's the context. So we separate a particular instruction or a particular example from the context. And that's, you know, and then we get misled by doing that. And actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he called his brother, who was Lili Prasad Thakur, who engaged in those sorts of activities, you know, instead of Pranali is called, he called him my Sahajabai. Sahaja means cheap. Brother, because we don't criticize, because you know he's a great devotee, being the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. All right, any other questions or comments? Yeah, Gurudev.
Thank you for pointing out I'm your Baba rogue. He was just on the road.
Yeah.
The other day, when you mentioned this Vrindavan Bhajan, I looked on Google and I tried to see, I couldn't find it. I wondered if it's somewhere that...
I could forward it to you. It's very hard to find.
Yeah.
Look it up by the words in it.
Look what?
Look it up by the words that are in it.
No, I get it. Just send me an email message. I'll email it to you. It is very hard to find. The whole thing is not in the Veda base. And it's really one of the most wonderful poems that Prabhupada had ever
wrote. Or you could put it on your Facebook?
I had done it before.
Oh, you had before, huh?
Yeah, I have done it before many times. I got, you know, as I mentioned, one time I was reading it in Vrindavan during the Prabhupada's disappearance celebration. I got stopped because people were getting offended by some of the things Prabhupada said. Because it was very heavy stuff, you know, about eating the mind's bananas. You know, Prabhupada really spoke heavily about Babaji's and things like that, so. But it is very instructive. You know, how to see all living entities as your real family. There's many topics in this. There's something like 26 stanzas in this verse, in this poem. Prabhupada wrote several poems that are just like really inspirational. Markandeya Dharma, I mean, and what Prabhupada wrote on the Jaladutta. you can really imbibe or try to understand Prabhupada's mood by reading those. And that's our business. Our business is to try to understand Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada is our role model in many ways. And that's meeting Prabhupada got me to join the Hare Krishna movement. You know, I mentioned before, I wouldn't have joined otherwise because it was very difficult, you know, shaving my head and wearing robes. This is extremely difficult. But as soon as I met Prabhupada, I did something I didn't want to do, joining the Hare Krishna movement. I'm happy I did it, but anyway, but because Prabhupada inspired me, his personal presence inspired me. So we should all develop that sort of relationship with Prabhupada and understand his internal mood. Like Rupa Goswami is the most prominent acharya after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he understood the internal mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnu, Stabitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swa. Padantikam. So he understood Manovishnam, the actual mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's why we are called Rupanugas, more than you know any other acharya in the Sampradaya. We're not called Madhavendra Puris, although you know he's a great acharya. We're called Rupanugas because he understood more than anyone else Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. So, all right, so any other questions? Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
You were saying how devotional service, when that's a means of income,
yeah,
it stops becoming devotional service. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering about temples or ashrams that also subsist on that service as a means of income. When does it go from mundane to?
Well, if a devotee is maintained, that's all right. You know, let's say someone's living in the ashram and they're maintained. That's not income. It's not that. Income means, you know, like a salary, like you punch in the morning, you're in the time clock. Okay, you know, my work day starts at 8 o'clock, boom. And then, you know, a time clock. And then, you know, income like that, like regular salary. Regular salary. Maintenance is a different thing. I mean, obviously, we all have to be maintained. You know, how can we do service? How can we even do voluntary service unless we get food, unless we get a place, a shelter. And we all have different levels of needs. You know, some people may need more facility than someone else. Everybody says, we shouldn't resent it if someone needs more facility. You know, someone may need a Toyota, another person may need a Mercedes. No, I'm just joking. That's not a need. I mean, that's just a funny joke. But, you know, people, and as you get older, you have different physical needs, too. I mean, I couldn't live now like I did as a brahmachari. You know, I couldn't sleep on the floor sharing my clothes with everybody else. That's what we did in the beginning days. You probably don't do that now. But we had a big box, and everyone would throw their clothes at the end of the day into the box. And someone would go to the laundry and clean it. And then the next day, we just picked what it, you know, closed our eyes, picked whatever is in the box out. And the socks were generally different colors, you know, red and green. And usually the things didn't fit us too well. You know, the shirts, you know, the shirt sleeves, you know, reached out to our fingertips, you know. And sometimes they came up to here, you know, long sleeves. So I don't think I can live like that. But it was fun. It was like summer camp, like Krishna Conscious summer camp. So, you know, anyway, so we need different facilities. That's not a salary. But, you know, if I end up with, like, you know, $5 million in my bank accounts, you know, cause then you know you're getting a salary. That's the point. So it's a question of discrimination because we don't want to develop a fruitive mentality while serving Krishna. And I've seen that in one temple where they have salaries that when the person punches out for the night, then if there's some issue, oh, so there's no one to do the deities tonight. Can you do it? No, I'm off duty right now. You know, I'm checked out for the day. I'm only supposed to put in 40 hours a week. You know, after that, I get overtime. Well, time and a half, as they say. You know, every RT I do, I get twice the pay now. Double that. You don't want that mentality. You know, I'm serving Krishna. and a voluntary living, not accepting any more than necessary to maintain the body and soul together, and that's it. You know, that's the standard. So we have to end. Any question? Other question? Quick questions? Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much for asking, Raj. You mentioned eating your minds with others. And I was wondering, how do we properly imbibe Prabhupada's mood while reading his books without eating the minds of bananas?
That's interesting. Eating the minds of bananas means you think you're actually experiencing ecstasy and you're more advanced than you actually are. And with that, and that means not being humble. I mean, there's many things connected with eating the mind's bananas. Because bananas usually means someone's crazy. If you say, he's bananas. Mm. It takes some discrimination to figure that out. But basically, one should be just very humble and consider himself to be lower in the store in the street, devoid of all sense of false prestige. And ready to offer respects means ready to serve others, consider himself a servant of everyone else. If you do that, if you're humble like that, then you won't be eating the mind's bananas. You'll be eating regular bananas. All right, I think we have to end now because we have a whole schedule and I have to do my Devi Puja right now. So we want to thank you all for coming. All glory is due His divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami.